Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behind the badge.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Paul Lisnick Behind the Curtain, my opportunity to step away from the world of politics and law that I cover on television every day to enter the world of my passion, theater and the arts. And what great fun we're going to have today as you watch my interview with pretty much the key players of the Jersey Boys playing over at Mercury Theater Chicago. Of course, you're watching this interview here on WGNradio.com or YouTube. And now these interviews will be available at AroundTheTownChicago.com as well. So check it out there, along with other theater reviews. Joining me, every Jersey boy in existence. They're all here, and we get to talk to them, and I'm just so excited about that. Let me walk through them. I'm going to actually walk through, it's an alphabetical list because, you know, then it's fair to everybody, even though we all know who the real star is. No, I'm kidding.
And it's alphabetical.
And it's alphabetical. That's right, yeah. So that's right. So we start with Adrian Aguilar. I didn't know your middle name is Alfredo, which you could get a role in Godfather 4.
That's correct. I mean, I did play the Italian Stallion.
And you're doing that here too, Tommy DeVito. Yeah. So this is stereotype for you right there. But Adrian joins us, who plays Tommy DeVito. Jason Michael Evans joins us, who plays Nick Massey. Just, you are real kind of, and I mean this in a good way, sort of comic relief in the show as well. Just very, very funny in what you get to. That's a good thing. And Andrew McNaughton, who may look familiar to you all from Frankenstein. No, he would not look familiar to you from Frankenstein, actually, because as the monster, we did not recognize you. But here he plays Bob Gaudio, just an incredible role in the show, and incredible of importance to Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons. And Frankie Valli himself, Michael Metcalf, joins us as well with the most glamorous background available to us. And we're gonna talk to all of you. So, all right, Jersey Boys playing at the Mercury Theater Chicago through July 28th. That's the current date. I'm thinking it's gonna go longer. What do I know? But it's already had a couple of extensions going on. Michael, I'm gonna start with you because you are Frankie Valli. You think everybody knows the show. I do too. But when I do that, then I usually get a message from somebody that says, I've never seen it. What are we dealing with here? So can you give us the brief? What is the story of the Jersey Boys?
Sure. So Jersey Boys, literally, it takes us through a journey through these four guys' lives from different perspectives of each of their lives. Kind of like the Four Seasons themselves. We got Spring, who we have Adrian representing in that. We've got Summer, which is shown by Andrew. Fall is the Nick Massey or Jason Michael Evans role. And finally, Winter with Frankie Valli. So we just get to see the different perspectives of these guys' lives and, you know, kind of the behind the scenes for each of them. And it's truly interesting, not to mention 32 songs or so thrown in there, and you've got yourself a great time.
And I'll tell you, look, I grew up with this music. So, it's reliving, but you know, the whole audience is just reliving it, regardless of age. You see people there just screaming out and yelling because this music will forever be popular. Adrian, let me come to you because Tommy DeVito, you believe you're the star of this group, or the creator of this group, whatever. I'm not saying you're not, but it is interesting to get everybody's sort of take on how this group got to where it was. So tell me a little bit about Tommy DeVito's view of who started and you, by the way, probably have the most legitimate argument here for starting the group.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, I think it's just sometimes in life we run into these types of folks who are just absolute machines when it comes to their drive and their ambition. And I think Tommy DeVito is that kind of a character. And so he had his eyes set on creating a group and creating a creating something that he could use on stage to pay his bills and live his life and kind of be a star. And so that character would stop at nothing, be it, you know, sort of false starts with the wrong group members or having a good group and then some of them go to jail. And so he just kept pushing and kept pushing and kept pushing until he, you know, more or less inadvertently put together the absolutely magical right combination of people to hit it big.
By the way, before I leave, I haven't mentioned any of your credentials, so I'll toss those in as we go. I actually saw you on Broadway in Rocky. And I tell you what, the way they the stage thing at the end for the fight, I mean, it doesn't exist anymore on Broadway, so it doesn't matter. I'm not going to go into detail, but how cool was that? And I got to sit in one of those sort of side seats there to watch the battle go on. But anyway, it was such a
fun show. Were you someone who came up on stage, or were you on the side of the Yes, that's amazing. Yeah.
Andrew knows me, and he knows I would not be not on stage.
yeah, it was a truly incredible theatrical moment. Like I've done many shows over the last 20 plus years professionally, and I've never quite experienced anything like that. It was really, really an incredible moment. And if you're one of the people that got to come up and on stage, the live cameras, the moving set, it was just really insane. So cool that you got to experience that.
I collect props. I forgot to bring it down. I have my Rocky jump rope, by the way, from that.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
But anyway, and the other reason, by the way, I made the Godfather reference when I introduced you initially was, of course, because you are the one person who probably we should be saying every time you try to get Godfather 2, every time you try to get out, they pull you back in. You are the one of the four who keeps trying to retire from the theater business, but whether it's Drury Lane or other places, you just don't seem to be able to give it up.
Yeah, it's debatable. I think now I'm at the point where, you know, it's kind of a tactic. You know, if you leave people wanting more, if you tell everybody that you're going to retire, then they want you to be in more things. If you tell everybody, I would love to be in more things, then they don't want you anymore. So it's just a trick. It's just a Jedi mind trick, really.
Well, then let's go to Andrew. Speaking of, you know, every time they always want more of you. And Andrew, originally Canadian. Wait, I guess you're not originally. You're still Canadian. But
Canadian.
But here you are. Fantastic as the monster in Young Frankenstein. And we talked about that in a different interview where, you know, when you leave the theater, people aren't quite sure who you are because the makeup was off. But I know you were fantastic. But you also, by the way, we did mention this last time, you graduated with your, I think, master's from the Royal Conservatory of Scotland. So you have that over everybody else. I just want you to, nobody else here.
No. Everyone's very well educated in this cast. You know, everybody has done whatever they needed to do to get to this point. But yeah.
You say that, but you know, internally you're going, they have not gone to Scotland. They have not studied Scotland. So they can make them feel good. It's my job to let them know you do not have your master's degree from Scotland. And Adrian, if the dog stays, I'm putting my dog on my lap just so you know.
Absolutely.
All right, Andrew. I'm all about the dogs. So, Andrew, let's talk about Bob Gaudio, because there's a good argument that without Bob Gaudio, there really is no Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons.
Yeah, I mean, he joins the group when he's very young. He's going to be the youngest of the group. I think he's, 9 years or 10 years younger than Frankie himself. So everybody's already kind of established in their own way. And then he joins the group when he's around 17 years old. But he writes all of the big hits alongside with Bob Crewe in the show. And he writes all of these massive hits over the years. And over the years, he even collaborated with different artists, and it's just fascinating to see how Bob Gaudio just has such a big presence within this group, but he's also supportive of Frankie's passions, leads him to do his own solo career, and then through the highs and the very big lows that happen in the group, he's there along the way, alongside with Frankie in this incredible friendship. So I just think Bob is has a lot of heart. He's kind of like the heart of the group in a way, too. Yeah.
And Jason, as Nick Massey, again, I sort of talk about you as the comedy of in the group. And you know what I'm talking about. There's certain scenes in there where you just kind of bring the house down with some great lines. We're not going to give them away here except the following. So we'll let people experience that. But in your role as well, you strike me as kind of like all these people can kind of point to Nick is the guy for me who says, God, if I had lived there and I had been one of them, maybe I could have been a Jersey boy, because you're just like a regular guy from the hood, I think.
Yeah. I mean, he's the oldest. I think by the time the group kind of starts, he's lost hold of that sort of childlike wonderment of being a big star. And although he is a dreamer, he's a very quiet dreamer, and he kind of always knows that this is a job, which is why he has no trouble disconnecting from it. He's like the big brother. Well, actually, Adrian's like the big brother. He's like the silent grandfather, I'll say, of the group. but I don't think he has any I don't think he thinks it wouldn't have happened without him. I think he kind of knows that what he brings to the group is stability, in the same way that like the bass line, whether vocally or instrumentally, is on the bottom, kind of supporting everything. I think that's kind of what he knows he is, but I don't think he has any illusions about this never would have happened without him. He's kind of the only person in the show that never references that, or where it's not implied. It's implied with Frankie, and Tommy and Bob reference it, say none of this would have happened without me. Nick never says anything like that.
Right.
He knows it probably would have happened without him. He's there for the ride, as long as the ride is fun.
And it's always the afterthought, but when we see, again, always trying to not give things away. You know, I'm always careful not to give things away. I interviewed the cast of Dear Evan Hansen once. Andrew may know this. And I said, is there anything I shouldn't give away? And somebody said, don't say that Connor dies. I'm like, the man dies in the first 10 seconds of the show. What do you mean don't give that away? But anyway, so here, I don't think I'm giving anything away. That really happened. Anything away to say that Nick eventually, but we know the group split up. So we learn more about, you know, Nick leaving. But it's almost as though Nick kind of makes decisions and then goes, what did I just do?
Yeah. Yeah. He follows his gut, and that's what puts him in the group in the first place. And that's what takes him out at the end.
Yeah.
And I dig that about him. He very much lives in the moment. And if something is not servicing him, he has no issues whatsoever letting it go. Oh, and by the way, I would be remiss if I didn't mention to you, Paul, that Adrian has never seen The Godfather, so he doesn't understand any of the references you're throwing at him.
And you know that to be the case? Have you, Adrian?
I do know that to be the case.
Adrian, on any Saturday night or most nights around midnight or so, go to one of these movie channels. They usually run what's called the Coda version. It's an 8-hour thing. And I dare you to turn it on and then try and switch channels after you watch it for just a couple of minutes. You will get sucked in.
He's furious at me.
No, I'm not. You lost me at midnight, turn on the TV.
Oh, that's right. Our suburban night. And by the way, Jason, nuts? I would be remiss if I didn't mention you yourself. I would have seen you, I think, in the national tour of Anastasia. So we'll talk later about how they made it snow and some of the fantastic things they did there. But you've also been here at Drury Lane and Chicago Shakes and all sorts of good stuff. So you're all kind of home guys to me. Michael. So getting this role, I got to tell you, and by the way, I don't know if you got, do you read your reviews? Sometimes I actors say no, I don't. You may all read your reviews because every one of them is fantastic. And Michael, for you, I just got to tell you, like, Chris Jones was like, he was floored by your Frankie Valli. I panned you. No, I'm kidding. you just floored him. And by the way, your credits, one of it, you were in Rock of Ages, so I saw you, of course, is that when you played Lonnie, and we've seen you with Theo and Music Theater Works, and you're doing all sorts of stuff. But in this role, I'm sort of curious, I mean, because you have to have various ranges of your vocal choice, vocal range that I don't think you've had to exercise before. Have you been cognizant of those ranges, or have you said, I got to think about the falsetto, or is it something like most of us could do if we worked at it?
I think so. I think anybody can do it as long as they work at it. When I first heard this like soundtrack, I guess the album back in like 2005, 2006, I was like, this is great music. Now I knew nothing about the Four Seasons. Unfortunately, that's on me. Now I know everything about them. I kind of dabbled around, but I never really thought myself as, oh, this is a role or something that I could do. And really it's truly been to like the credit of everyone behind me that's just keeps pushing me forward and believed in me, truly. From the moment I walked into the audition where the music director kind of came up to me and said, do you think you can do this? Because I know you can. But do you think you can do it? And I was like, yeah, I can. This is going to be great. So it's been a lot of determination and a lot of I think the other guys can come in and back me up on this. And I ask them all the time to make sure I don't go out, make sure I don't drink anything. It's just been a...
Make sure I don't go out.
Yeah, make sure I don't go out.
Adrian's looking at the camera and he's going, I didn't invite you. Actually, let me ask each of you, Adrian, come back to you for a moment. I'm curious as to whether each of you auditioned for the role you hold, or did, because I don't know how Walter and Eugene, whatever, did the auditions, or did you go in and just say, I want to be a Jersey boy, so here I am. And what happened? Adrian, did you have somebody in mind, and is that the role you got?
Yeah, I mean, Tommy has always been the role for me. I've just been waiting to age into it. it's funny, a couple of the interviews that I have done, people have asked, what's the hardest part? What's going to be the hardest part about playing this role? Or what is the hardest part? And I truly don't have an answer because I'm just being myself.
I'll take that off my list.
Yeah. So there was really no moment where I thought I could be a different character. I mean, Tommy's just who I am on or off stage. So it was pretty clear to me that I'd be going in for that one. And that's what I was asked to go in for. And so I'd been waiting almost 20 years for that audition. So I was pretty ready to go.
And therefore we pulled you back in.
Yep.
Andrew, were you always, was Bob Gaudio in your head or were you too just, I mean, cause again, you do so much, I think auditioning, whatever, we just saw you. So did you have that role in mind or you're like, I want to be a Jersey Boy?
Yeah. I mean, I saw this show when I was 16 years old in Toronto, as a Canadian, but I saw it when I was 16.
Torontonian.
I'm close. But I saw it when I was 16 and I fell in love with the show. And over the years, it just kind of progressed into really diving into the cast album. And I really, really loved the role of Bob Gaudio. And so whenever this came along, it's been over 15 years that I've wanted this role, and Chicago was finally doing it. Let's just say I went in pretty hard for Bob, and they saw me for Bob Gaudio and went in and sat at the piano and sang Cry for me for my initial audition. So let's put it that way. I went in pretty intensely for that role. You
know, and one of the original Bob Gaudio, I interviewed that cast when it was sort of first here, his name is Drew. He went on to do Waitress and just some incredible stuff. So you're all in these phenomenal roles that other people have gone on to. Jason, how about you? Was it always going to be Nick? Or because you're perfect for Nick, and maybe, but who saw that? You or director or Eugene and Walter?
I've done this role six times. I've done this show six times, and I was never anything but Nick. When I went in there, I knew exactly what I was. I sang as low as I possibly could in the audition, and I didn't really give them a choice. Back when Jersey Boys was still on Broadway, I think I had an audition for Bob when I was like 25 that just was never right, other than age-wise. So it kind of similarly to Adrian, I was just waiting to age into the role that I always knew was right for me.
And by the way, Michael, so just from your story that you said before, it sounds like they reached out to you that they had you in mind for Frankie Valli.
No, actually, I went in for Joe Pesci at first.
Really?
Yeah. Well, they
also role. I'd love to.
A great role. But I think it's because I did the funny man, Lonnie in Rock of Ages. So they kind of just were like, oh, bring him in for this. It wasn't until I sang a couple of the songs, they were like, bring him back for Frankie.
I love that.
I do have to say,
go ahead.
I do have to say, I think that part of the magic of, like, at least from what I've been hearing from folks who are coming to see the show, and also just the way I feel in the dressing room and that kind of thing, is that I think that we struck a little bit of gold with this particular group of four guys that you have here, because I think they tried to hire people who could perform the roles. But what they accidentally got was a very, very similar dynamic off the stage as well. You know, as they were just telling their stories just now, you can tell Andrew always knew he was a Bob, and like just in general. And Jason's always known that he was a Nick, and I'm always a Tommy. And so it's very similar vibe off stage as it is on stage. And so that chemistry that the show tries to create is innate, because we also have it even when we're not being our characters. The only difference is that Tommy's known for being a slob and Nick is known for being very picky and clean, when really I'm very, very picky and clean, and Michael is an absolute tornado disaster slob.
Michael, would you like to defend yourself?
Nah, he's right.
jumping off what Adrian said too, it's kind of like this, they struck gold with Frankie especially, and Michael is just so humble, but he's also incredibly talented. The guys push him like throughout the show. Tommy says, hey, do this, and Nick says, hey, try this. We all push Frankie, and that's what we kind of do with Michael too. We're like, you can do this, like, just trust, and like, you got this, you know. So I think
that's part of the magic for sure.
Yeah, I'm sure you guys, I'm sure you've been asked by a lot of people. I try and ask questions people aren't usually asking, but I'm sure you've been asked sort of like, what's the toughest part, whatever. And you, Adrian, you said you've had that. But Michael, for you, because of the vocal range, you have to exercise 8 times a week, which is why apparently you're no fun after the show, don't go anywhere, which I respect. But at the same time, I'm thinking there's a point in the show where a few of Bob's hits come together. Sherry, whatever, you, it's one after the other, whatever. That has to be a very tough thing for you to do night after night. It sounds great and I love it, but I'm thinking vocally, when they first wrote this show and put those things together, they weren't thinking of what they were doing to the Frankie Valleys of the world.
No, I don't think they were.
Do you find that tough?
Oh, yes, absolutely. Like I said earlier, it's been a lot of discipline. It's been a lot of support from my fellow castmates. And there are days where I think I turned to them on multiple occasions. I'm like, I don't know if I got it in me today, but they always back me up. And, you know, I always make it through.
We try to sneak water whenever we can, because, like, there's huge periods of time where you're like, wow, there's no water. I'm on stage. Yeah. Entire time, or I'm changing on stage, you know, so there's a lot of that kind of stuff going on too.
You're sneaking water on stage, or you mean you're running, you're in a moment off stage?
There, both.
We snuck water on stage. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay. You know, Jason, since you played this role, as you say, so many times, I'm sort of curious, have you learned, there's one thing about, you all, I'm sure, studied Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, learned about them, as you said, some of you didn't know that much, but now you do, and you studied them. From your perspective, have you learned anything about Nick from doing the role that maybe was or was not true about him, but from playing it so much, have you learned something about the way he was, because he's no longer here, but something about the way he would have been that you found insightful and informative of how to play that role? Make sense?
Yeah. I mean, so the only time I've seen Jersey Boys when I wasn't in it was Broadway back in, I don't know, maybe 2012, 2013. And to be completely honest, I don't remember much about it other than that John Lloyd Young had just gone back into the show, who had won the Tony. Yeah. Like 8 years earlier. So that was like a big deal. So when I kind of got to approach Nick, I kind of got to do it the way that just felt right. Which from what I understand, isn't at how it was directed. So, originally, so I get the feeling like my Nick is sort of a cross breed between how he was and how I am. So, like, I feel like the things I'm learning about him, I'm simultaneously learning about myself. Like he was a dreamer, but he also was comfortable where he was, which I think is a really interesting line to sort of teeter. Like, he loves dreaming. He loves thinking about stuff, but he's not willing to sacrifice that which he already has in order to go out and get it, which I think is really different from a lot of the guys in the show and is not all that different from me. You know, I love being where I am. I'm super comfortable living in Chicago, just doing my thing with my wife. It doesn't mean I don't dream. But so I guess what I'm trying to say is that I feel like the things I'm learning about Nick, I'm kind of learning about myself too. And it's been a really fun. Everyone's a little different.
Yeah.
But.
See, when I think of people being in the business, whether it's your business or my business, I mean, the bug is so strong for me. The notion of, like, if I'm, you know, what would I do if I wasn't doing television or whatever? Well, I mean, I used to practice law. I ain't ever going back to that. And I did pick juries, like the OJ case and stuff. So I have done some things. But at the same time, I'm just kind of, I love what I'm doing. Adrian, because you are the best known for wanting to have left the profession over the years, I'm sort of curious, what is it? What's the pull? What, in other words, is it insurance? I mean, what is it you're saying? This is what I would love to be selling these guys policies. What's in your mind?
Are you asking what I'd rather be doing, or what keeps me?
No, because I think you love what you're doing. You can take the question however you want. But if you weren't the actor, what is this career that could be pulling you away?
Well, so I've always had a simultaneous second career at the same time. Back in 2006-ish, 7-ish, which is when I met my wife. At the time, she was just my girlfriend. In college, and I've always been very open about this, I try to talk about this as much as possible publicly because I think it's very important, especially for young men. But I have always struggled deeply with depression. And back in 06, 07-ish, I was kind of at a low point when it came to dealing with depression. And I sort of Googled how to deal with depression. And I found a lot of things about controlling your lifestyle factors like exercise and diet and sleep. And that changed my life in such a huge way that I very much decided to dedicate any and all of my free time to that passion. So I first became a personal trainer. Then I had my own sort of personal training business that took me all the way to the heights of being the general manager and head coach of a CrossFit gym in Andersonville, and then managing two Anytime Fitness locations, which is what I left to do this show. So that's always been my sort of like my mission statement on the side. And so at certain times, depending on where my wife is in her career, because she has bounced between performing and teaching, performing and going back to school to get her master's, also having a child who just turned 11, which I can't believe, there have been times where it was more appropriate for my family life, which is my true priority, to lean much harder on the health and wellness career. And then there were times where it made more sense to lean more on the acting career. Mm. But I've kind of always done them simultaneously because I believe very passionately in the fitness and health world because of the impact it can make not only on people's physicality, but on their emotions, on their emotional well-being.
You give me a very respectful and serious answer to a goofy question. Yeah. So I respect that greatly. Although I did learn one thing. If the key things are fitness, food, and sleep, we could not vacation together.
I don't vacation. I was going to say earlier, I didn't want to cut you off, but Michael is still more fun after the show than I am.
Okay.
even when he's not allowed to do anything, he's more fun after the show than I am. I don't do anything.
Yeah, me too.
Wow. Again, this is like the party team over here. Poor Andrew. What do you do? No one's going out with you afterwards.
Nah, I'm pretty much the same as Michael, honestly.
Yeah, I love it. You just stand around and mess things up in the dressing room or whatever. By the way, Michael, so I interviewed Simon and Garfunkel recently, the guy, actors who play them. And you may or may not know the story if you follow this, but Art Garfunkel showed up one night in the audience about a couple of weeks ago. They didn't know he was there. He bought a ticket under assumed name. Nobody knew he was there. And apparently towards the end of the show, they do Bridge Over Troubled Water. Garfunkel just got up and went to the side. And as Brandon Jacob Smith, who plays him, turns to introduce the Paul Simon character, Bobo, he turns to introduce him. Who walks on stage but Art Garfunkel? And blew them away. And you can see it on YouTube and stuff. People recorded it and absolutely blew them. All of that, which is to say, I don't think Frankie Valli has been in the audience. I'm pretty sure he's the only one who could ever show up at this point. I think we've lost all the other ones. I'm fairly sure. I think
Gaudio might still be alive.
Gaudio and Frankie are still with us.
Yeah, I thought Gaudio passed a couple years ago, so I'm glad I'm wrong about that.
No, that was Tommy. Tommy died, I think, in 2021.
Okay, gotcha. So let me just ask, so Michael, if a Frankie or if Gaudio, you know, if they showed up and sat in row C, which is where I've named six seats, which is my promotion to tell other people to name seats in the new auditorium, support the Mercury Theater, Chicago. I hope you guys will go out and sit in those seats one night. But anyway, first of all, Michael, if Frankie showed up, would you want to know he's there and how would it impact you or maybe not at all?
I would not want to know that he was there.
By the way, he's coming back to town, just so you know.
Yeah, yeah. October, right?
Yeah, the Four Seasons are performing. So I'm going to do what I can to have him be there. But anyway, go ahead.
That's crazy. And it's going to be his birthday in like 2 days. He's going to be 90 years old.
Wow.
Crazy. He's still
so torn. You would not want to know, but if he was there, you'd be good?
I would be good, but I would be very
You would want to know
after the show. Yeah,
wow, he was here. Like,
and if Frankie like said, "Come on, kid," if Frankie said, "Come on, kid, I want to take you out," you'd go, "I don't do that."
Oh, I would definitely go out for Frankie. Sure. I'm calling out the next day.
At that point, you got to call out for the next one and go.
Sorry, guys.
I think that might get all of you out. I'm fairly.
I wouldn't go.
Yeah,
we're all going.
If Gaudio showed up, whatever, and you had a chance to meet with him afterwards, what would you want to ask him? What is there something you want to know about Bob Gaudio? He's still there.
Oh my gosh. I mean,
be the same. I'd want to know afterwards. And then I'd absolutely go out and say hello, you know. And I mean, there's just so much just to his life and his career. And just, I mean, he's still partners with Frankie from what we know. So like maybe asking about that, being like, are you going to be around, you know, come in Rosemont Theater later? Or what are you doing now? You know, just yeah. Try to say, you know, he's a human being, right? Like that's kind of the thing. Just ask normal questions, I guess. Right.
Well, of course, the music is iconic, and as we're running out of time in a bit, and I want to just kind of get to know you guys a little bit and the folks who play this. But Jason, I will tell you, when I interviewed the original touring cast, they tried to teach me the dance, you know, just the step. I don't know why I can't get it. I don't know what my problem is. But did anybody have a problem with this, with the famous Four Seasons move?
Oh, the Walk Like a Man move?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's.
Well, none of these guys did because they're all unbelievable dancers. I am not by nature, but because I had already done it hundreds of times, I was able to pick it up for this production. But no, I mean, these guys are all great. I don't think any of you had any issues with it. I mean,
you all got that? I had a rhythm thing going. I just couldn't get it down.
Jason's selling himself short. He has a degree in dance.
Yeah.
By technicality,
is it from the Regal Conservatorium of Scotland? By the way, Jason, because if not, anyway, the music is so incredible. And Andrew, I just coming from a role where you didn't quite get to, well, you did sing. You sang Putting on the Ritz in Young Frankenstein, but this one actually gives you moments to shine. So I'm just sort of curious as to, you know, you have to love this music. I never get tired of it. I've seen the show probably, I don't know, 9 or 10 times.
The music is timeless. I mean, there are still songs on the radio today. Beggin, Måneskin, literally Eurovision 2020 winners or whatever. They're doing Beggin. You'll hear it on the radio. Countless covers of Can't Take My Eyes Off of You and Oh, What a Night. Those are like the big three. There's also like My Eyes Adored You. Like all of these songs that come up. And it just brings back memories for everybody in the audience. Even the young people sitting in the audience will like tap their parents and be like, I know this song. Yeah. What the heck? I didn't know they did that. Like even the little things like Stay, like that one too. Like there's all these songs. They're just timeless.
So classic. And by the way, I remember as a kid, I remember when Can't Take My Eyes Off You came out. And it was, and there's a huge buildup in the show towards that number. We'll let that people experience that. But I got to tell you, I played it as a kid a billion times. I could not get enough of it. Oh, and my guess is that the Chicago audiences, people visiting, will not be able. I mentioned Jersey Boys to everybody I meet. So I want to thank all of you for being with me. Jersey Boys is at Mercury Theater Chicago through July 28th and hopefully longer. And you can get tickets at jerseytheaterchicago.com. Guys, thanks for spending some time. I hope we chatted a little bit about stuff you didn't get to do with others, but I appreciate your spending some time with me. Adrian, play with the dog and the kid if you must, but but certainly the dog. And I thank you for being with me, guys. It's been a pleasure. I look forward to seeing the show again.
Thank you for having me,
Paul. Thanks for having us, Paul.
Thank you.